I'm speaking with Margaret Cook, and it's February 24th, I think.
Yes, sir. I get the paper. That's the only way I know. I get the paper the first thing in the morning.
Oh, 23rd. Here, 23rd. I got it right here. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's Wednesday, February 23rd. And this is tape two. And we were talking about how you met your husband.
I met my husband just by a partner, bridge partner, I guess. Everybody played bridge in my generation besides going to beer halls on Saturday night. We played bridge and looking for a bridge partner. Friend of ours who knew a friend who didn't have a partner, so we got together as a bridge partner.
How old were you at that time?
I was in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm. And where were you living?
I was living in Potsdam, New York.
Oh, so how was it that you moved from Maine?
Well, my uncle got lost his job in the paper mill. Was a whole carload of paper was shipped wrong, and he took the blame for it because it was in his department, and he insisted that he had nothing to do with it. So somebody has to be the fall guy, you know. And he lost his job. And the fact that he was never very good to me, very kind to me, was I realized that he never would be dishonest, you know. Said he didn't have anything to do with that shipment of paper. But somebody had, the New York office was in charge, and somebody had to take it, the fall guy, you know. So he was let go, and he got a job in a paper mill in Potsdam, New York, which was a night job, night foreman. So I had to go. Nothing would do, but I had to go too, because she wouldn't stay alone. She was the type that always looked under the bed before she went, got into it, you know. She was scared.
Was she from Scotland as well?
Oh, yes, but she wasn't very bright. And she wasn't very kind either. Is that all right? I had to go, and I had a pretty good job. I made $20 a week. That was a lot of money in those days.
In Rumford?
Yeah. So I got a job in Potsdam, too. Yeah, I didn't get one right away. But I had a pretty good job.
What were you doing?
Just a stenographer. The man I worked for was he went to the mill to help reduce accidents, to a safety manager, that's what he was, a safety division engineer. The mill and Potsdam had gotten so bad, and in Maine too, where they had to hire a safety engineer, or they couldn't buy insurance. They couldn't get accident insurance.
What was happening to people in those mills?
Well, in those mills, they shipped the wood that they made, they boiled down the wood to make wood, if you know anything about paper making, to make pulp, to make paper. And they would float the logs down the rivers, and they'd go out with these sharp things and hook the logs. And the woodroom people, the people that lived on the woodland department, that's where the accidents all were. And they'd get severe cuts, you know. I even sold in my department shoes with steel toes, boots with steel toes. Another thing they did was run around on top of the machines and in their bare feet. And so they fought the steel-toed shoes. They didn't want them. But I sold them while I worked in that department. We had 24-hour nursing service. We had a doctor that came in every morning for an hour to pick up the accident reports that we had during the night. It's terrible. And we had physicals once a year right there in my office. We'd have physicals.
Was mill work
Dangerous.
It was dangerous, and was it well-paying, relatively, or not?
No, as I said, I got $20 a week for what I did in the office. And that was about standing pay for a stenographer.
So when you met your husband, was your husband from Scotland?
No, he was Irish. He was Irish, and so was all his family. He was a good fellow. My husband, you're talking about.
Yes.
My husband. No, he... what did you ask me?
Was he from Scotland?
No, no. His family were all New England, English, Irish. They were, my husband went to, he started in at Tufts. And he got what students get every now and then that lays them low. They call it the kissing disease.
Mononucleosis.
Yes, he got that in the fall. When he went home for Thanksgiving, he was so sick that he never did return to school until that year. And when he did go back to school, he went somewhere else. I don't know where he learned bookkeeping and stuff like that. More practical, you know.
Was there a time when you changed your attitude about wanting to go back to Scotland?
Never.
You always wanted to go back?
I always wanted to go back. Now I'm satisfied. I don't think I'll ever go back because I'm not sharp anymore. I'm not quick to learn.
The reason you don't want to go back is because you don't feel sharp?
I'm not very capable of doing anything. My husband takes charge of everything. Now, maybe he spoiled me in that sense. I don't know. I don't know how to run that thing over there. I don't know how. We've got a new, oven. Electric oven, you know what you call it?
A microwave.
Got a new microwave. The old one that I knew was just a simple one I'd had for years. This one is all so technical. I said, don't leave me with that thing. I don't know. I don't want to know anything about it.
Well, when I say, did you ever change from wanting to go back? I mean, to go back there to live.
No.
Did you, when you first came here, you were pretty unhappy, it sounds like.
Yes, very much.
You wanted to return to your brother in Scotland. Did that change at some point?
Well, he died, of course. He was, they all had, my father died of, there I go again, and he had the same disease my father had. It's a blood disease. When you don't have sufficient blood in your...
Not a hemophilia?
No, it's... my brother died of it. My father died of it. It's... and they tested me down to the... Leukemia. My father died of leukemia, and that's what my brother died of leukemia, and I have a new doctor down here, a woman that I like very much, and she doesn't want what your previous doctor had, your records. She wants her own records. So I wrote down about what I had. Father died, leukemia. Mother died, weariness, tired out, you know, from work. Brother died, leukemia, and so forth and so on. So she always says to me, with your record, I say, I don't need that medicine. With your record, and with your history, that's what she said.
So, well, if you were to think, think about the aspects of you that are Scottish, or customs, or attitudes? Is there anything else that, if you were to divide yourself up between American and Scottish, are there qualities that you have of each, or how do you feel? Do you feel more American than you do Scottish, or?
I'm American. Yes, I'm American now. There's no doubt about that. Scottish, definitely, would be my history, my background, but my present living, day of living now is American, method of living. We're American. My children are all Americans. I didn't become a citizen until the people in Miami started importing all these people coming in from other countries, and especially on boats and things, you know. They were escaping from other countries, and Miami was full of people that were seeking citizenship, and I decided that I'd better become a citizen. Prior to that, I thought I was a good enough citizen. I didn't know what was going to make any difference to me, the fact that I wasn't legally American. Mm-hmm. Didn't bother me a bit. I didn't vote, but my husband kept saying, "Here we are, all citizens of the United States, and you just don't want to." I said, "I'm a good citizen. What's the matter with me? I do the best I can to be a good citizen." But I finally decided it's time that I took out my citizenship. And it hasn't made one difference in the way I live, not one bit.
Well, the fact of these people coming in, often illegally, what was it about that made you decide that it was time?
I wondered if that had any balance or weight against my not being a citizen. I don't think so. I don't know whether that must have, probably, it did have. But I was afraid of that they'd ask me who was vice president under such president, and I'd forget my history, American history that I had. Because I am very, very forgetful, very forgetful. But I went to Miami and became a citizen. Not too long ago, I've got a little American flag in my dining room window to show that I got an American flag with all the rest of them when they got their citizenship. Mm-hmm.
Would you have any advice for people who were coming to this country at this time, who were coming here as immigrants?
Well, my own country people, my own country, they're so much better and thoroughly advised about things now, with your televisions and all. And there are some people that are anti-American here that were raised in this country because they don't like the way that our government is run, and everybody complains. Everything is in the open now. I don't know that that I would ever tell anybody they shouldn't become American, but anybody that I have an uncle, a cousin in England that we stayed with last year. We left Scotland, went to England. It was so cold in Scotland. And I have a cousin there. They're very good, very, very good people. But they have a son that lives in Houston, and I was working in Houston for the same company that my son is working for in Miami. It has to do with their airlines as the background of airlines. They're all, they're not such and such an air. They're built on what keeps an airplane running, and what keeps an airline in financially secure. They've lost so much. Airlines have lost money so much. It's all got to do with computers. It's all got to do with what makes a company successful and what isn't. That's the company that my cousin in England and his son in Houston and my son in Miami. He started with Eastern Airlines, when he got out of college, he graduated from University of Florida, Florida State, not University of Florida, and got in with was Eastern Airlines that he went to work for first.
What is his name, your son?
Darby. His name is Darby, too. Darby Cook. Darby Phillip. My husband is Marcellus Darby. He hates Marcellus, but that was his father's name, Marcellus Darby Cook. But Darby was a family name, too. So, and I thought Darby would be simple, and I didn't want the Marcellus, so I called him Darby Phillip Cook, my son.
And you have other children, too?
Oh, yes. I had Janet. My first one was Janet, named her after my mother. Mm-hmm. Janet, she works for Allstate Insurance. And her husband is manager of Allstate in North Miami. She works in Fort Lauderdale for Allstate. And they have a daughter. Works for Allstate now. She, you know what she's doing now? She's a very, very bright girl. She graduated from Auburn University. You know where that is? So did her sister, Auburn University. That's in it's in Florida. Is there?
I don't know it.
No, it's not in Florida. It's in Augusta area, Georgia.
Oh.
It's in Georgia. But they're all entangled in this airplane business and computers. Jill, my first granddaughter, she is an electrical engineer. She was a graduate of Auburn University. The month that she was to graduate, her fiance, call him her boyfriend, was hit by a drunk driver, killed. Well, you can imagine what that does to a girl. Right, of course, she was in shock for a long time. She joined MAD, Mothers for Drunk Drivers. She joined that organization, worked hard for that. And then she went to Central America. First she went to Mexico and on a church project to build houses for the poor down there on the river. A mother with 10 children, and she didn't have a room for her of her own, and she had a drunken mess for a husband. So she went down there 2 years and took work for that.
Was this a Presbyterian organization that she was involved
with? I don't know if it's directly affected by the church or sponsored by the church. I don't know, because I don't think so. I think it had to do with the death of that boy, all that. Because when she, the first time she went to, down there, she went to Belize, and they had computers that had been donated by the church that nobody could put together. And she went down there to install those computers and make them run. And then after she got back there, she went back to Belize again last year. But last year she was working with a couple of people from the church. One was a dentist, was doing teeth, and they've worked with children. They all do good work, and that's what Jill's makeup. That's Jill's makeup. She's got to be doing something like that. So I said to my son Darby in Miami the last time, I said, I wonder how Jill is going to end up. He says she's going to end up in the church. That's where she's going to end up.
Well, now you have Darby and you have Janet. Uh-huh. Do you have other children too?
Yeah, I had Jim. Jim works for lawyers. What do they call them? They do all the leg work for lawyers. They're paralegal. He's a paralegal, Jim is, in West Palm Beach. And my youngest one, Jeffrey. Jeffrey had a very, very bad life. When I was working, and I had to put him in care of a sitter. And while she was taking care of him, he got into dry draino. He was just 3 years old.
Oh.
And apparently it was in her playground that somebody had thrown out. Dried rain on it, the can had fallen off, and he was showing off in front of everybody, and he was playing a tea party or something, and put some in his mouth. And swallowed, it was dry, and the minute he inhaled it, it came down and landed about halfway between the esophagus and burned it. And we were years, for years, he was down in Miami. They just put things down to stretch it open. We finally took him to Boston Children's Hospital. And they pulled up the stomach, cut the bad place out. It was halfway up, you know, halfway up. Cut the bad place out and sewed it together. And after two or three trips up there to get stretched out, open, because it would grow together. And in the meantime, he had a permanent tube in his stomach. He went to school with that, too. And he came home at noon. I was always here. And fed him, and this ended my work, my career as a stenographer again. But I wanted to be with him. And so we pumped it full. This kept him, you know, you could drink milk. He could drink soft drinks, but hardly any food, you know. So by the time he got to junior high, my son Darby said, "Mother, you've got to do something about him. I can't see him going to." He had a tube in his nose too, and he said, "I can't see my brother going to high school and everybody dating and him with all this contraption on him. You know, couldn't play football or anything like that. He could run. He was a fast runner. That's all he could do. But anyway, now he's all right. After that mending, he has a short esophagus, but he eats well. He can eat just about everything. And, of course, he didn't get much schooling, but it didn't seem... Some people aren't affected by that. He went to school with all this stuff in him, on him, you know, and the first time, I think, the third grade, I have to tell you this because to me it was very impressive. He came home with a passing card into the third grade. And I said, Jeffrey, you haven't been in school a month in this past year. You haven't been for a solid month at one time. And how could you have gotten a passing. Well, that's what he gave me, he said. So that he gave me pass into third grade. I went down and I talked to that teacher. I'm with that report card in my hand. I went down and I talked to him. And I said, "I appreciate your passing Jeffrey into the third grade, but do you know how much schooling he's missed this past year? How could he be prepared for the third grade? I'd rather have him repeat it and get it." He says, "You're thinking wrong." He said, "That boy's got more on the ball than either one of your other two boys that's gone ahead of him. I can vouch for that. He's got more on the ball." He said, "He's got better mind. He thinks better. He concentrates better." He said, "You can't hold him back."
Wow.
Isn't that wonderful?
Wonderful.
Every time I see that man, I cry. Because he was a better judge, but apparently whatever they're teaching, that grade isn't very important.
Oh, that's what third grade is. Yeah. Well, yeah. Tell me what you're most proud of in your life.
I think I'm proud of my family. I'm proud of no credit to mine, that every one of them are kind and good, clean citizens, and they don't drink. They did their smoking when they were in school, and I couldn't stop to stop them from smoking. And I'm very proud of my family and my husband, although sometimes I get mad at him. But
how about this phase of your life? How do you feel about this time in your life?
Well, I wish I were a little weren't quite so thick-headed. I wish I could concentrate. I Now, here I sit barefooted. Now, if I had had anything, any wits about me, I would have realized that I had to at least get my clothes on, you know?
Well, I hope you feel comfortable, because I do, and I'm certainly not going to judge anything about shoes.
No, but it's really, it does bother me. And my husband says the same thing. He says, why don't you go to the hairdresser? So keep your hair going. Because my hair is nothing but fluff, you know. The older I get, the more fluffy it gets. And I wish you'd go to the hairdresser and get your hair done. But I said, well, I don't drive, and I have to wait for you to pick me up, and you take me and all that. So I could roll it myself, and it looks pretty good, you know. But
well, is there anything else that you'd like to say before we close about coming to this country or being in this country or your life?
Well, I think it was fortunate. The immediate effect of a person is not what's important. It's how you can handle it. It's how you handle it. How the good Lord keeps you straight so you and gives you an opportunity, you know, to develop. I've been fortunate in my friends and my my own children, and even the child that my husband had that he had adopted, she's a wonder. She's a wonder. She called up this morning. See, he's going to have a birthday this year. He's a what do you call him?
Octogenarian?
No, he's a he was born on the 29th of February.
Oh, a leap year. Right?
He's a leap year person. So, and every time he has a birthday, it's every 4 years, they celebrate. Now, this year the celebration is going to be with my second son, Jim, in West Palm Beach.
Oh, nice.
And so they'll all be there. All the families will be there.
Wonderful.
And that's an occasion for a celebration.
Did you yourself go back to Ellis Island? Is that how you got this form?
No, how did I get that? No, it was advertised, and my little boy, Jeff, the one that's had the trouble, he married a girl from New York. She's out now to get her doctorate. She's very clever. She's a mathematician at the college out here.
So she picked up the phone.
Yeah, she went. She's from New York.
Mm-hmm.
Her parents live there, but they come down here in the winter. They have an apartment that he is apparently not lacking financially, because he has a permanent ride on the plane. He has a frequent flyer ticket, and the rest of the time his sons run his business. And
so she went to Ellis Island, I imagine.
They've been to Ellis Island, yes. And I don't know. See, it's hard for us to get anywhere. Son Darby has a fit, because if we go 50 miles up the road, he thinks that his father shouldn't be driving. How old is he now? This is his birthday coming up. Well, how old am I?
Yeah, I was just looking at that. You were born in June 1911. So he
was born in 1908.
Uh-huh. So how old are you right now?
I'm 50, 60. I'm 82, I think. Am I?
82. You'll be 83 this year.
Uh-huh. See, if somebody else has to do all that figuring for me, I don't care how old I am. I mean, I know how old I feel, and that's terrible.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with me, and this is.
But how can you put that into? Okay, are you going to condense that in some form?
What I'm going to do is bring the tape back to Ellis Island, put it in the library there. Mm-hmm. Make a copy of it. Send it to you so your children and grandchildren can hear it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And then at some point we'll type it up, just as it is. Then I'll ask you to sign this release form, and then you can, people can come in and they can listen to it. And they can maybe take parts of it if they're writing up something or whatever. Use what portions of it make sense for their project.
Okay. So maybe sometime I'll get up there to see that. But right now, Darby, my son, would have to take us personally to do this because he doesn't trust us to go.
Okay, let me just sign off here. This is Janet Levine for the National Park Service. I'm talking with Margaret Cook. It's February 23rd, 1994, and we're in Mrs. Cook's home in Fort Pierce, Florida.